It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Orlando Crowcroft, World Editor at IB Times UK. Welcome to our new podcast, In the Field. Each week we speak to journalists and stringers, aid workers and experts who are at the heart of the stories that matter. This week, we're crossing the Atlantic to look at America 1 month before Donald Trump's inauguration on the 20th of January. Trump has been keeping everyone on their toes with his appointments, and as we recorded this episode, he was yet to decide on who he wants as his Secretary of State, arguably the most important job in his new cabinet. He's also been annoying the Chinese, refusing to attend briefings, and questioning the existence of climate change. But what will Trump's America look like? Will the brash billionaire rein it in after the 20th of January? Will he roll back on some of his more outlandish campaign promises? Will he stop tweeting in the early hours of the morning? This week, we talked to Melissa Deckman, a professor at Washington College, and our Washington-based correspondent, James Tennant, to try and get some answers. So Melissa Deckman is a professor at Washington College. She's going to talk to us about the impact of the election in America, how people are feeling about it. We've got about a month until Trump's inauguration, so I think the dust has settled a little bit. Melissa, first, just talk me through how you felt on the night when this first happened.
Well, I think as a political scientist, I was shocked that Trump won the Electoral College. Now, of course, many people who study elections and do fancy models had predicted that Hillary Clinton would win. And she did, of course, end up securing more than 2 million more votes than Donald Trump. But clearly, a lot of us got it wrong. So I think a lot of us were really surprised that Donald Trump was elected president.
And in terms of how the how people have reacted around, you know where you live and your friends and people in professional fields, I mean, are people kind of, have they come to terms with it now, or is there still quite a lot of shock?
I think for those who are very liberal, those who are passionate Democrats, they're still in shock. Some of them hold out hope that perhaps some of these sort of outlandish schemes to have the Electoral College deny him the victory will work. But I think the reality is setting in for most people. We see a cabinet forming. We see Trump being more engaged. And so it's going to happen. So I think there's a level of acceptance. I think also that Democrats are sort of trying to figure out what happened, how they lost the election, and where to go from here. But for many Republicans, I think that they're accepting Trump, even Republicans who, frankly, were part of the Never Trump crowd, who were not thrilled with his nomination. They've sort of coalesced in line because Republicans now have an opportunity. They control both houses of Congress. Their man is in the White House, and so they're looking at this as an opportunity to really make some major changes, especially in terms of economic policy.
Yeah, there's an argument, isn't it? I've heard it said anyway by some American commentators that actually this is going to be almost like a government by Congress. So the congressional Republicans are going to be able to get away with pushing through a lot of reforms because Trump is just going to rubber stamp them.
Well, you know, that's what a lot of people are saying about Trump's first month after being elected. It looks as though Mike Pence, his vice presidential pick, his hands are all over the appointments, his hands are over some of the major policy initiatives. And in lots of ways, Trump has sort of morphed into a more conventional Republican, especially when it comes to economic policy. And so I think that many Republicans in Congress have long wanted to cut taxes. They've wanted to roll back regulations in lots of areas. And frankly, his appointments to places like the Environmental Protection Agency has given lots of Republican businessmen hope that there's going to be lots of changes that will increase their profitability. Of course, you know, critics of Trump would maintain that his populist rhetoric is not really being matched by who he's appointing to the cabinet. And I think that many Republicans in Congress are going to have a lot of leeway in enacting changes that they want.
And we're still waiting, of course, for Secretary of State, which will be a very important decision.
Yeah, that has really been an interesting debate to watch. And in reality, I guess the thinking now is that Rex Tillerson has merged atop the list. This has given a lot of people pause. Even some Republicans in the Senate, for example, Lindsey Graham and John McCain, are looking at this pretty critically because Tillerson, as head of ExxonMobil, of course, one of the largest energy companies in the United States, has very, very close ties to Vladimir Putin. And with recent revelations by the government that Russia had got involved in this year's presidential election, even some Republicans in the Senate have raised eyebrows over this election. Not to mention Tillerson, of course, has absolutely no diplomatic experience prior to this. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch if, in fact, he can survive the nomination process.
I mean, in the wake of the Brexit vote here in England, we had, in the UK, we had a kind of spike in racist attacks. We had a lot of speculation that this had really unearthed something. Has there been a similar kind of thing in the US?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, well before this election, the term alt-right was one that wasn't really bandied about much in the US. And so since Trump's election, there's been sort of a surge in interest in and discussion about the alt-right, which is really just a term to sort of describe sort of a loose coalition of white nationalists working in the United States. Now, their opinion is still far outside of the mainstream, but the sheer fact that you have Americans who hold this view of looking at whites as some sort of endangered class and arguing for policies that separate whites from people of color, the fact that we're having these conversations is really troubling to lots of Americans. And the fact, frankly, that Trump put in place as his chief strategist in the White House, Steve Bannon, has really caused some anxiety and worry by many Americans. And so it's unleashed, I think, a lot of rhetoric that's hateful, that has really shocked a lot of Americans, including people who are Republicans. So it's really been remarkable in ways that are not good, I think.
And of course, an area that you've written a lot about, of course, is rhetoric against women as well.
Yes, yes. And so that also has been, I think, somewhat problematic. You know, a lot of feminists were hopeful that Hillary Clinton would be elected as our first president in the country and talking about the importance of women's rights. Instead, of course, the country elected someone who has said some hateful things about women, who's been charged with sexual harassment and other sorts of terrible things. And so for the country to elect this man despite that has many women's rights activists worried. What will be interesting, though, is to see with the election of not just Republicans in Congress, but more Republicans were elected to our state legislatures. Already there have been moves, for example, to restrict abortion rights in states where Republicans gained more seats at the state legislative level. And so lots of women's rights activists are very concerned about things like abortion rights and equal pay legislation. These are not things that Republicans necessarily care about or prioritize. And so a lot of feminists are concerned about what will happen with women's rights under a Trump administration and with Republicans controlling more and more state legislative seats around the country.
I mean, in the run-up to the election, Trump really did kind of nail his colors to the mast when it came to abortion. And I imagine people saw that kind of quite cynically as an effort to draw in the anti-abortion kind of religious right. Do you think there's any suggestion that he will go as far as he kind of threatened to go?
Well, I think his selection of Mike Pence, who is one of the most staunch anti-abortion rights activists in the country, I think really shows that this is a situation where in Congress you could see attempts to, for example, defund Planned Parenthood. Republicans in Congress have tried to do that the last several years. Planned Parenthood is a nonprofit organization that also happens to be the largest abortion provider in the United States. And for decades, it's received lots of money because Planned Parenthood also provides low-cost health care for women. Most of what their work involves is things like helping women in terms of you know, routine health care and things like that, providing birth control. But, you know, they are, again, the one of the country's leading abortion providers. And so I think that, of course, will end up being defunded because you have a Republican in the White House and you have Republicans in Congress who have tried for years to stop federal funding of that organization. That, I think, will happen. Whether Congress will pass and enact tougher restrictions, you know, I think there's a really good shot that that will happen as well. Mm. I think many American women and many men who are pro-choice, frankly, have sort of taken that right for granted. But now you have in place an administration and members of Congress who are going to work very hard to sort of chip away at accessibility to abortion rights in the country. Mm. And not to mention the Supreme Court, right? So now Trump has the ability in the first couple of months to appoint a Supreme Court justice. The court is very divided on this issue. And so he's, I believe, going to choose someone who is pretty avowedly pro-life. And that gives the pro-life cause some hope that abortion, eventually maybe even Roe versus Wade, which is the decision that legalized abortion, could be overturned. But, you know, it gives lots of women's rights activists pause.
I mean, in terms of how people are dealing with it, I mean, people who aren't Trump supporters, what's the kind of view? And people saying, okay, 4 years, let's get our head down, try and do damage limitation and plan, you know, for a change in 4 years' time. I mean, what's the plan?
I still think Democrats are trying to cope with what happened, and they're still in denial that that they lost. But, you know, they're having frank conversations about what direction the party heads in. You know, a lot of people like Joe Biden, who is, of course, leaving the vice president's post, have talked about how the Democrats lost the white working class. You know, the Democrats have always been a party for the working man historically. But yet Trump did extremely well with white working class men. And so there's a conversation in the Democratic Party about how to reach, how to pull those voters back into the Democratic fold. There are those who say that we should really just stick with, the Democratic Party should stick with sort of the diversity message that helped to elect Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012. And so the Democrats right now are doing, I think, some deep soul searching about what his message should be. You know, the Democrats, again, did very poorly, not just in losing the White House and in being unable to win back either house of the of Congress, but, you know, they lost seats at the state legislative level. Mm. And so there is some very fierce discussion among Democrats what they need to do to kind of rebuild themselves at the grassroots level. And that has yet to really materialize. I think a lot of people felt that if Bernie Sanders had been the nominee, he would have been elected president because he had a message that was more economically populist. And of course, many Democrats say that Trump kind of stole that message, and by the looks of who he is appointing to his cabinet with alum from Goldman Sachs, et cetera, he's really probably not going to really champion the cause, I think, of the working class in lots of ways.
Is it really interesting parallels, though? Because, I mean, this same thing happened in the UK, and as a result, we got Jeremy Corbyn, a socialist, elected the leader of the, you know, the Labour Party. So I think whether the Democrats will do the same, whether they'll go to the left now and think of a Sanders-like candidate for 2020.
Yeah, no, that is really a good point. I mean, there's really no heir apparent. I mean, I think one thing about this election is for Democrats, for 4 years, there was the thought that Hillary Clinton was the heir apparent. And so she really failed to amass any concrete challengers. And the one person who gave her a run for the money was Bernie Sanders, who many Democrats laughed off. They said, there's no way that Sanders could be elected as the nominee. He's too far to the left. He's not even a Democrat, frankly, right? Mm-hmm. He just decided to run as a Democrat. He's always been an independent, self-proclaimed socialist in Congress. But, you know, he came pretty darn close to winning the nomination, which again speaks to the fact that many Democrats are unhappy with the status quo as well. So watching this battle among the Democrats is going to be just as fascinating as seeing what's happening on the right side of the spectrum, too, in this country.
Yeah. So last question. I mean, we've talked about what the Democrats are going to do, you know, going forward, reforming the party, looking to the next election. But in terms of regular people on the street who don't like Trump's message, they don't approve of the racism, of the foreign policy gains, of the attitude towards women, how do they deal with the next 4 years?
I think it's not going to be a very happy 4 years for these folks. You know, a lot of people are speculating that, you know, Donald Trump might end up being impeached, right, because some of his behavior already is so outlandish as president-elect. But I don't think that's a winning strategy. I think that for those folks, the activists have to sort of regroup and figure out how they can make changes locally and try to beef up the party. I just think for some, it's going to be 4 years in the wilderness, and they're not going to be happy with the results of this election. You know, America is extremely polarized politically, and we saw this in this election cycle in ways that we hadn't before. And so I think it's going to be coming to grips for lots of Democrats on the left. Republicans, however, are very optimistic, and they're very happy about the changes that a Trump administration could bring. So it's going to be fascinating to watch in lots of ways.
Fascinating. Thanks so much for your time, Melissa.
Oh, happy to do so.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Now over to James in DC.
So James, welcome to In the Field.
Thank you very much.
We know you've only been in America for a couple of days, just moved over there. But we'd love to know your kind of first impressions politically of how the election and Trump and so on is being received.
So, I mean, in my first couple of days, I've been very excited to talk to people about everything that's going on. And everybody that I've talked to has seemed not quite as excited to talk to me. I've mostly been in liberal areas over the last couple of days, and everybody seems very, very despondent with the results. I'm currently down in Charlottesville, where the University of Virginia is, so there's lots of students. And I think for many of them, it was the first election where they really felt involved. You know, it might have been the first one they were voting, or it was one where they canvassed and campaigned or had Hillary stickers and that sort of thing. And I actually had a friend a couple of days ago who said, I felt really excited by this election, and I felt so disappointed by the result that I really just don't want to have anything to do with politics anymore.
But were they Hillary supporters then, or were they more Sanders?
Yeah, most of them were originally Bernie people who had then gone on to support Hillary reluctantly. But anything was better than Trump in their eyes.
Yeah, so I mean, they were, I guess in Trump's terms, they were very much part of the kind of liberal elite who weren't really expecting this to happen, like us journalists and everyone else.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's sort of funny with Washington D.C. because there's that comment about London being like the metropolitan liberal center, but for D.C. it's really quite true.
Yeah.
I mean, the election result for the District of Columbia was, I think it was 93% voted for Clinton, wow. Which is quite like an astounding amount.
Yeah.
To the point that, like, I think if you saw that result in like a number of other countries, you'd immediately assume foul play.
Yeah, it's the kind of Richmond of, you know, with the Brexit vote, that was something like 80% Remain.
Yeah, yeah. So I was trying to think about the similarities between the aftermath of Brexit in the UK and the sort of feeling I'm getting here. And one is definitely that though there's a lot of talk of coming together, there's a lot of talk of oh, we're going to unite and unity is very important now. There doesn't seem to be any sort of action or real feeling from either side that they're going to do that.
Right.
There's a lot of bitterness and a lot of gloating, really.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And those people you were talking about earlier who said that they were very despondent, the young people, do you get the impression that they will do that, that they will get involved and start new movements? Or do they kind of want to get out of politics now before they've even really got into it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's probably like a stage of grief, right? I'm not sure what the five stages are, but I'm sure that's one of them. It seems like the election has sent people in two different extremes, in that there are some people who are now just sort of fed up with politics at all. I'm talking about liberal people, Democratic supporters. There are people who are just kind of fed up with it. And then I think there are a few people who feel a bit more kind of radicalized by it, who now want to get much more involved and feel like they need to get much more involved.
Right. And as a journalist, you've moved there now to cover this story, which on the 20th of January will be Trump's America. I mean, do you expect that to be more difficult than it would have been, say, covering a traditional candidate like Hillary? I mean, Trump's relations with the press have been idiosyncratic, to say the least. I mean, they've been hostile. Do you think that will be reflected in covering the White House?
The thing about Trump is that there's a terrifying amount of stories that are constantly coming out. So he's sort of wonderful for journalists in that way, that you're never really searching for anything. I mean, he's about to do his first press conference later in December.
Right.
It's in a few days, actually. I think it's on the 15th. This was after he announced that he would be handing his business down to his children. He said he would do a big press conference of it. And this is now the first proper full press conference he's done since July 27th.
Right.
Apart from that, he's only really stuck to doing the one-on-one interviews where, you know, he can be a bit loud and be kind of aggressive enough without having a swarm of journalists asking him questions. So, I mean, we'll see how that goes. There was a lot of talk of him calming down as soon as he won the election. So we'll see whether that's really the case.
I mean, his recent actions, even in the last week or so, demonstrate that perhaps he has no intention of calming down.
Well, I mean, he stepped away from some of his campaign rhetoric. I haven't heard him mention the wall in a very long time.
That's true, yeah.
But he still has this very defensive side, and he's still very quick to react to criticism, it seems. So I think in that regard, no, he hasn't really calmed down. But the kind of policy ideas that were coming out during the campaign, you know, we're not really sure whether he really meant them.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the wall is the perfect example, because we really haven't heard that much about it since he was elected. And his proposed ban on Muslims entering America as well. It's another thing that has sort of disappeared a little bit. Apart from, there was talks of a database of Muslims in America, but not the ban that was talked about before.
Yeah, a register they were talking about.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see when he has to go up against these kind of seasoned White House hacks. I mean, he is so defensive, as you said, and he hasn't really had to do that before. And the conventional relationship between, say, the press corps and the president is going to be really turned on its head.
Well, the question is whether or not he's going to do it at all. I mean, there were senior Republicans who were saying, like, why does he have to do any press conferences now? Trump and the team around him feel so... They have this idea that they've been, like, unfairly attacked by the press. And so now are saying, well, why do we have to deal with them?
Yeah.
And, I mean, pretty much he could just not do another press conference.
And as a journalist, someone who's covered a few things over the years, how do you feel about the prospect of covering Trump?
As a journalist, it's quite exciting. As someone living in America, it's I suppose a little bit worrying. It's hard to say, because everything seems very unpredictable at the moment. I can't really imagine where we're going to be by January once he's inaugurated.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say.
Yeah, and we don't even know who Secretary of State's going to be yet. So I mean, it'd be very interesting.
Yeah, that's true. The Secretary of State thing was funny with Rex Tillerson now. Looking like the front runner, because it seems very much like Trump is kind of rejecting a lot of his early friends from the campaign. Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, was quite publicly campaigning to be Secretary of State in a pretty unprecedented way.
Yeah,
and has now lost out, or seemingly lost out on that job.
Yeah,
and then it was the same with Chris Christie, the New Jersey governor. There was a report that came out last night that he'd been offered a few posts, the cabinet level positions, but had rejected them all because he wasn't getting what he wanted. He wanted Attorney General,
right?
Which has now gone to the fantastically named Jeffrey Sessions.
Yeah, it's a real motley crew of characters, his cabinet.
Yeah, it's. I think there's more millionaires or more billionaires than any other.
Yeah,
and a surprising number of generals as well.
Yeah, well, listen, exciting times, and thanks for talking to us, and good luck with living in Trump's America.
Thank you very much.
So that's the situation over in the U.S. Just over a month until Inauguration Day. We've included rich links to some of the stories that Melissa has contributed to over the past few weeks. So if you're listening on Acast, be sure to go back and check them out. Also, make sure to keep up with James's coverage from the US on ibtimes.co.uk. Also, if you like this podcast, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review. Next week, we'll be focusing on China and looking at the impact of Donald Trump's threat to end America's support for Beijing's One China policy with regards to Taiwan. The Chinese had initially welcomed Trump's election. Are they still so keen now? Until then, take care.